golfj.com.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our special 2016 edition, our 2016 PGA Championship recap edition, episode, chat, discussion of the GolfJ.com podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropia alongside Rhett Taccone, Doug Brown, here inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in Seneca Falls, New York on Monday, August 1st, 2016. And the major championship season is now complete. And we have four first-time major winners, but I certainly am not disappointed by the overall competitiveness of the final rounds of all the majors and the news that came out and the compelling storylines. And for the general American public, I don't think that Jimmy Walker is a huge storyline, but for those of us that follow golf closely, certainly a little surprising. Nobody was picking Jimmy Walker coming into it, but when you look at his resume, five PGA Tour wins, more in recent history.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that came on the tour. What are we? He came on the tour in 04 at age 25, but he had to wait until 2013 at the Fries.com Open for his first tour title. Right. He had some injuries. He hurt his back while preparing for his first start of his rookie tour season and had to then return to the web.com tour in 2007. He was 34 years old when he became a PGA Tour winner, a winless in his first 187 PGA Tour starts. Walker now owns six PGA Tour titles, including a major championship, by holding off the world number one player on the back nine Sunday. Right. Great tournament, Doug, right?
I agree. Jimmy Walker's been, you know, the last 3 years, 4 years, a good body of work. Mm-hmm. I know he's had a little bit of get out of the gate this year, a little bit slower than he has in the past. But he's made some swing changes with Butch Harmon. You know, he's been working on trying to move his head a little bit as he swings. He kind of looks like, remember David Duval kind of turned his head a little bit, Annika Sorenstam?
Yeah, Sorenstam, that's what they've been working
on. And but I think the big improvement he made 3 or 4 years ago was a short game with, under Butch's tutelage. Right. But overall, not a big shock that he won this event. Certainly a worthy champion. He's had a good 3 or 4 seasons. He hits the ball a long ways. His short game is pretty darn impeccable.
Looked pretty good this weekend.
Yep.
Looked,
nice guy. Dynamite. Good interview. I'm glad for him. I think he's a good all-American boy.
And an American champion, yes, making it two of the four majors. Yeah. American. So what do you think, Rhett?
It was good to see. It was good to see him win, get a win for an American as well. He moved way up the Ryder Cup standings. We'll talk about that too. But you know, it's good to have somebody on our Ryder Cup team that's won, you know, winning a major. Him and Phil, right, playing well. But it was also good to see the world number one stay in there all the way to the end, when a lot of the other guys, the so-called big three, the big four, big no three, no four, whatever, not there. You know, so it was good to see Jason Day come all the way down to the finish too, and really put some pressure on Jimmy, and all the more special for him to finish it out after seeing that eagle and then going up there, hitting it, hitting it a little sideways on his second shot, but then making, you know, he could easily put it in the bunker or blown it over the green with that lie. Right. And he stepped up there and got it close and made the putt. So that was good to see too. So, yeah, overall it was a great tournament. Unfortunate about the rain.
Right.
Really kind of messed things up a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was another solid major. And that's what we expect from those tournaments, on those big courses.
Well, Walker becomes the oldest first-time major winner from the United States since Todd Hamilton shocked the world at Royal Troon back in 2004. He averaged about $39,000 per PGA Tour start prior to winning that Fries.com, which, hey, that's not too bad. If I could go play golf and make $39K a week, I wouldn't complain. But since then, he's averaging $191,000 per start, so a little more lucrative, a little more worth his time, you know, to play some golf. But when I'm watching the final round, well, a couple things. First of all, I thought for sure Jason Day was going to win the tournament. You know, it's a typical guy struggling to, you know, win his first major, and the world number one player, you know, just two shots behind, and it just seemed inevitable that Day was going to overcome it, that lead. But Walker never really gave him an inch, and when he made that sand shot, when you hold that bunker shot, that's when you started to think, man, this might be his day. And then he fouls it with another birdie. And it's amazing because, you know, Day just couldn't hit it close enough, but he couldn't get any of the bombs to go. So really the difference in the tournament is, you know, a hold bunker shot,
right?
You know, on the back nine. But kudos to Jimmy Walker, because every time, you know, Jason Day would make a made a nice par save at one point, the crowd went crazy, and he stared down the fairway at Walker. Well, Walker then birdied the hole. I think it was 17.
Yeah.
Yes. And then 18, Jason Day eagles it. You know, Walker's thinking, okay, I can bogey to win maybe. Yeah. Then Day eagles, and now all of a sudden he's got to make that par, which is a big difference. And we were chatting, Red, I think, over the text messages when Walker missed the green right on his second shot. And, you know, he still needed to just get up and down or get down in three. So it was like, to me, I said, that's a 35-yard par three. He needs to make par.
Right.
But under those circumstances and playing from that wet rough with a big bunker, and even when he hit the shot, I said, that's not an easy two-putt
right.
with your first major championship on their line. But guy showed some gumption.
Sure did.
He knocked down that three-footer at the end. You know, we've seen guys miss shorter, Scott Hoke, you know.
Doug Sanders.
Until that ball goes in the cup, it's up in the air, and he's not a major champion until that ball final putt goes in. And he did it. You can't take it away from him. Time will tell if he builds his resume or, you know, becomes another Rich Beam type of story.
I think he'll win more tournaments.
Yeah.
But majors.
Maybe not win another major, but I don't think he's going to go away like Sean McKeel type guy. Okay, so I think this guy will win 10, 12 events by the time he's all said and done, because he is 37, right?
Sure.
But he's got game.
No doubt.
And with that type of power and that type of putting skill, especially if you can putt, you don't go away.
Well, he you know, bogey-free round.
Right.
So with two birdies and a clutch. Finishing hole, you know, par on the finishing hole. So to go bogey-free in the last round of a major with the number one player in the world chasing you down, that's very impressive. And, whether he wins another major or not, I could see him in contention for some, for
totally
sure.
Agree.
You know,
he'll be comfortable. And
yeah, I mean, and he's been, like you said, in our circles and golf circles, he's been a name around for the last three, 4 years. So, you know, he was on the President's Cup team. He's played internationally. Right. So
he's a second-round draft pick in our fantasy golf league. So
But disappointing year this year, right?
So far, yes.
Yeah, because he had a good year last year and finished.
Because he won in Hawaii last year, I think.
Yeah, and
went crazy with a 2,600 par rounders
for
a tournament or something like that.
And then I remember a few weeks in a row on DraftKings I was picking him, and then kind of have moved off of him for a few months now because we really haven't heard his name. And then wire to wire, so shows he's definitely got the talent. You know, whether he's in top 20 every week type guy or not, but he certainly could be in contention for other majors.
I thought one of the other pivotal holes was, I think it was the 15th hole. He drove it into a tree on the right-hand side, although the tree was cut up a little bit. He played a second shot, was kind of a knockdown that flew to the green and had some backspin on it.
Mm-hmm.
He made a par, but that could have been a disaster.
Sure.
All right. I thought that was a pretty big turning point at that point in time, although at that time I think he had a two-shot lead, maybe a three, but it could have been a bogey or double bogey.
Yeah, and then the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you don't know what one hiccup would have led to.
Right.
Certainly a sand shot, nice. He was going to try to make par, obviously, maybe make it, but that was a nice fit. But I thought that wayward tee shot that he actually saved par and relatively easily saved par because of a great second shot. From a gnarly lie, knocked down probably 30 feet from the pin, easy two-putt.
And a lot of guys, I guess my second point was that yeah, he had to overcome Jason Day, but that wasn't it. Henrik Stenson was in contention.
Yes.
Robert Streb was in contention, and a host of players really.
Kepka.
Kepka was right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
None of those guys got it done on the back nine.
Right.
But Jimmy Walker did. Jimmy Walker and Jason Day are really the only two guys that really had a clean slate, you know, coming home on the back nine. And if so when watching that, I just wanted to see somebody. I wanted to see Day put a little more pressure on him before that eagle. If Day makes a birdie on the 14th or 15th hole and pulls to within one with 3-4 to play, it's just a whole different tournament, I think. But not to take anything away from Jimmy Walker, because I was waiting for that little chink in the armor, and it never came. He kept hitting greens and making putts.
So we've talked about tips over the last couple of weeks. There's a guy that did the same routine time after time, right? So he focused on the process. Yeah. Watch him putt on 18, right? He marked the ball. He lined it with the line.
Yeah.
He steps back the same way. He steps in the same way. He didn't worry about it was 3 feet or 30 feet.
Say putt of the his first putt of the tournament on the first hole yes. was the same as the 72nd
yes.
hole.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Routine. So he obviously listened to, you, to our show last week.
That's right, routine.
Well, I sent him the link and via email. So, but yeah, if you just look at the numbers, ranked second in strokes gained around the green. Strokes gained around the green, he was plus 1.23 per round. 10th in stroke gained putting at 1.3. Ranked 30th in strokes gained off the tee. And 15th in strokes gained approaching the green. And he saved par 14 of the 17 times that he missed a green this week. And that scrambling percentage of 82.5% led the field. So he outplayed the field.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether the weather had something to do with it or, you know, everybody played the same conditions. But, you know, the one – how disappointing is it if you're – the greenskeeper at Baltusrol, and you're the tournament organizer, and you prepare for years for this, and then you get that kind of weather.
Right.
That's
but
a bummer.
At least it didn't have to go to a Monday finish, because
right.
I think that's worst-case scenario for any major championship. It just takes all the luster away, and what we got was a nice Sunday night primetime,
right.
you know, close, yeah. and it was just a difficult day for the golfers. Walker had to finish his third round, or play his third round. Then he had a layover where he said he
right.
took a nap. And,
yeah.
you know, it's weird that you'd be able to take a nap when you're in contention of the majors.
Well, there was 86 players made the cut, so it was a big field.
Yeah.
So that wraparound on Sunday was deep.
Yeah. And I would think that they would have pushed him up a little sooner and got him out on the course, but they didn't. That was the same mistake they made at a previous PGA where the PGA of America didn't push it up and it forced a Monday finish. I mean, they were almost guaranteeing this was going to be a Monday finish on Saturday night.
Yeah, once they got the
any weather at all would have pushed
it. Yeah, three straight days.
Yeah.
And it also kind of ruined the – I don't know how happy CBS was with the decision to not repair the groups with the
right.
weather because, you know, they kind of had to do it the way they did it just
right.
because it was so tight. But it was disappointing. It would have been nice to see Day and Walker in the same group and see, you know, an eagle and then
right.
see if he can make that par. Changes. It just adds a – whole different dimension to what Walker's got to do to finish that out if he's got the guy standing right next to him screaming and, you
right.
know, and fist pumping instead of up the fairway. But
what did you think know. About starting him late on Sunday? The superintendent had to be a piece of that decision because, of course, he had to be ready to play.
Right? Yeah.
And don't know what it was like.
They moved a lot of water
yeah.
from the footage I saw, so
they're
he probably
there.
Needed every last minute.
Yeah, so I'm sure that he needs extra time as well compared
yeah.
to what it would have been if it was dry.
Sure.
So.
Squeegee's got their workouts in.
Oh, they sure did.
I think they showed more coverage of those than they had golf at some time.
Well, it shows you how valuable the crew that is there.
Yeah.
And they bring in a bunch of volunteers that are all professionals as well.
Right.
But without those, there might be 100 people that work on that golf course. I don't know.
At least.
I might not be.
They bring in
far
the superintendents
yeah.
from all across the area. And most of the people that
oh,
are
yeah.
working there aren't regular course laborers. They're actually superintendents
yes,
at other golf
right.
courses. So
right.
everybody knows what they're doing. They
yeah.
get out there with a purpose. And it really is amazing what they did with that golf course.
Right. And possibly 4 or 5 hours is all they had to work on it.
Yeah.
You know,
and pull a lot of it in the dark.
Morning, whatever.
Yeah,
yeah,
pitch dark.
Right.
So. The other side of this coin is Jason Day, and we'll talk a little bit about Jason Day, the number one player in the world. But runner-up at the PGA Championship was his 13th top 10 in 25 major starts, including one win, the 2015 PGA Championship. Four runner-up finishes at the 2011 Masters, 2011 U.S. Open, 2013 U.S. Open, and this year's PGA. The runner-up helped him regain the lead in the FedEx Cup. It's a pretty tight race between him and Dustin Johnson. Day has just a 34-point lead over Dustin. Adam Scott sits in third place, 672 points behind Day in the lead. So that's Day's third win this season. Johnson has two. It looks to me like early favorite for player of the year would probably be Jason Day, despite not winning a major.
Right. Three wins.
Yeah, and none of the major winners other than Dustin Johnson and arguably Stenson, really. Don't have a clear cut claim to it. So, It'll be interesting to see who the player of the year is, but right now I think Jason Day has an inside track. But some of the other stories, Jordan Spieth had a real interesting ruling in the second round, first round, where his ball came to rest on a cart path full of puddles.
Right.
And he decided, because of the how close the trees were to the cart path, that if he dropped on the left side, he had no shot. But from the cart path, he had a shot. And so he dropped it on the cart path, which, to be honest with you, as much as I think I know about the rules of golf, I was wondering, can you take relief from a cart path and drop on the cart path?
He took relief from casual water.
Right.
Okay. Which, in the cart path, is going to be just a piece that's through the green, because you can hit the ball off the cart path, right?
Yep.
And then he could have taken a second drop from the cart path. My issue with it is I don't think he took clear relief from the casual water.
Well, that was the argument. His toe was still in
He said hovering over the casual water. I think that's immaterial. But the official was right there, so I'm not trying to become a PGA rules official or something. But years ago, Tom Kite got in some trouble. He took relief, I believe, from something that had a white circle around it, like ground under repair.
Yeah.
And it might have been a cart path, one of those two things. He took relief, dropped the ball, and when he hit the ball from the new spot, the heel of his golf shoe was still on the piece that he took the relief from.
The white line.
And he got a two-stroke penalty because he didn't take relief. I don't see any difference in what I saw with the casual water relief.
They tried to explain it away as the fact that he had relief, but then he changed his approach to the shot, his stance.
Right.
So if he had stood a certain way, but you're right, it looked like his toe was in the water. Right. And again, here we are in a major championship, like nitpicking over these little rules.
Right.
Spieth didn't win. He had a nice showing, but, you know, he wasn't in contention, so it wasn't really that big of a deal. But one of those things that is a diehard golf fan and a golfer, I love seeing that stuff and thinking about it. But mm-hmm. as a casual golf fan, is that really why you're tuning in?
No.
To see if Jordan Spieth's toe is over a puddle and that so he's going to be penalized, or if Dustin Johnson's ball moved. I mean, you want to see these guys go out and compete, hit great shots, and go head-to-head against each other. And from you hear the PGA and USGA and the RNA all talk about growing the game of golf, and this is one thing that I don't think helps grow the game of golf, you know, at all, really. Nor do, and we'll get to the television coverage in a second, but the PSAs that they run for commercials about for the good of the game and junior golf and all that stuff, I don't think that's the answer either. Not sure exactly what the answer is, but I know that making a casual, more people watch golf on TV than play golf. Like, you get people that watch it that don't golf, but those are potential golfers. And when they're going to sit there and watch Jordan Spieth debate for an hour about where he's going to drop on a cart path, and then after all that, with a referee right there, he receives more scrutiny of whether it was right or wrong. It's just like, what kind of game is this?
Right. Of course, the casual golfer is going to get it out of the puddle, get it off the cart path and hit the
ball. And slap.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, and.
Well, and probably drop on the wrong side of the path, probably, giving himself the easier shot.
You're not, no harm, no foul.
Right.
And you're not going to give any thought to if your toe is touching the casual water or not. It's funny, you guys are saying this in the growing the game and the confusion that some of this lends to. I was bringing my son and a few other guys down to a basketball camp this morning, and we were talking about the major yesterday, and they were talking about it, and three out of the four of them were watching it, and one didn't really have any interest in golf, but the other three did. But the one thing they were like, it's like golf is so confusing sometimes. You know, they're like, there's so many rules. They were saying this. This was actually them saying this morning. So this type of thing doesn't help when, you know, you're trying to teach young kids, and they've got so many things to learn. It's like every time I go out with my son, I'm telling him something new.
Right.
There's so many things to go over with them.
Right. There's only 34 rules.
Well,
but there's a whole kind
of 34 points.
Paragraph one, paragraph two, section three. Yeah.
34 rules with five to six rules per rule.
Decisions come out because of events.
Yep.
Right. So.
And the interpretation of the rules is such that any local club pro, not only do they have the rules of golf, but they have a book that's this thick that's called Decisions on the Rules of Golf.
Right.
That helps them, you know, so many. And in golf's defense, it's not played on a line field 100 yards long with it's played in out in nature where over large tracts of land where any type of circumstance can come up, and that circumstance needs to be covered by some sort of rule. So there is a lot of different circumstances that could happen to a golfer out there, and when you're playing for millions of dollars, there needs to be a resolution. But what I've seen from these decisions in the majors is there really wasn't a definite, like, here we are talking about Spieth. Well, he didn't take full relief. There was a question. Justin Johnson, did he cause the ball to move or didn't he? And what was the one in the British? What was the ruling in the British that was a little controversial?
No, I forget. I'm drawing a blank.
Well, I didn't mean to put anybody on the spot, but the point being is that
there was another one. You're right.
The point being is that, you know what it was? It was the PGA event in between where they ran out and told the LPGA event where they Women's U.S. Open.
Yes.
Where they ran out and told somebody about a rules violation that they touched a pebble of sand.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Clearly she did touch the sand, but it was the fact that she hit shots before knowing that it was even a penalty.
Right.
Golf has to eliminate that kind of stuff because the American public can't relate to it. The American public's fine with watching a football game where a referee misses a pass interference call and it might cost a team their season.
Mm-hmm.
And we're okay with it.
Right.
You know, we talk about it on social media and the ESPN radio, they're talking about it the next day, but we live with it. That's part of the game.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody felt comfortable about what happened at Oakmont with Dustin Johnson
Going back to that, with Dustin Johnson, the ref was right there. He made the ruling. He asked Dustin Johnson right there, did you cause the ball to move? Dustin Johnson said, nope. And he said, okay, I'm fine with that. Move on. That's where it should end.
Right. There should be a statute of limitations on when you can call somebody on a penalty.
Right. They're referees.
And it's like in the case of the LPGA, if a viewer on TV saw on the replay that she did touch the sand, well, sorry, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would have felt bad about it because it was so imperceptible, you know, it's impossible to perceive her, she wasn't consciously treating. She didn't gain an advantage.
Right.
It's just applying the strict rules.
I like to know when when this all came into play where people could call in and they started
Going that for years.
Yeah. No, but I know it's like at what point, why did that start being allowed to happen? You know, it's like, okay, well, we missed that.
A lot of rules officials, couch officials.
Yeah.
Right? Well,
I think back years ago, they allowed it because it was somebody saw the video, let's call it in. Now there's so much digital equipment.
Mm-hmm.
High definition.
And enhancement and so many cameras on just a few guys. It's getting out of control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go back to Craig Staley, put the towel down, knelt on it back in like the San Diego Open
That's right.
That was building a stance. Nobody questioned that immediately.
Which is amazing, right? That's a pretty obvious rule, isn't it?
Yeah, but there was no rules official. It was a relatively everyday event for the tour, right?
Right.
But somebody called it in. Sure enough, he gets disqualified.
Yeah.
All right? That's one thing. But now we're talking about moving a pebble of sand that she couldn't tell she moved it. She didn't feel it nor see it.
Right.
And nobody in the area saw it.
Right.
It took a super zoomed in HD. And that goes back to the Tiger rule, I think, or not the Tiger rule, but Tiger, every shot Tiger hit was on TV.
Yes, it was.
So he was at a disadvantage when it came to the rules because everybody saw everything he did.
Right.
So if somebody touched that pebble of sand in the first round of the LPGA off camera, it's not penalized. But instead, it costs the woman the chance to win.
Sure did.
So
I'd be interesting to scrutiny if Tiger Woods was standing on that puddle, how much scrutiny there'd be.
All right, yeah.
Because Jordan's a golden boy. No disrespect to Gordon, Jordan. Tiger's not. Love or hate him.
Yeah.
It would have been a bigger uproar if that was Tiger Woods.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Point being, though, is that this is not the way you grow the game of golf.
By
determining major championships by a pebble of sand or a millimeter turn of a golf ball.
Okay.
So hopefully, now that the major championship season is over, and this stuff doesn't really happen on the PGA Tour regular events. Seems these major, because USGA runs four events that are televised a year, maybe. You know, the U.S. Women's Open, the Men's Open, the Amateur, and the Women's Amateur, maybe the Senior Open, but not too many. The PGA of America just has this one big event, unless you count the PGA Club Pro. And the RNA has the British, and the Masters has the Masters.
Right.
So they aren't as is schooled or well versed in running tournaments is the PGA Tour that runs every single week.
So these events happen. The John Deere Classic is coming up in a couple of weeks. Somebody's going to go out at 6:45 a.m. and play golf. Let's say it's us three, and you stand up and say, my ball just moved.
Right.
And we're going to say, did you cause it? You're going to say no. We're going to say, play on.
And right. off we go, and nobody
we're
ever
sign the card, it's over with.
Right.
I got to believe those events happen virtually every week. Yep. It's just because of the scrutiny of the cameras of the final groups.
Final groups in majors.
Yes.
Yep.
But I say that it should not be allowed. The players police themselves with the help of the rule official when a decision is made on the course. Mm-hmm. And it even goes back to the point like Roberto DiVincenzo losing the Masters because he signed an incorrect scorecard. Come on. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy beat everybody saw. Why, especially in this day and age, would it matter if you signed an incorrect scorecard when everybody out there
right.
knows? I mean, but that's a part of the thing, like, you know, for us in tournaments.
It's responsibility.
Yeah, it is a responsibility to do it. But it just, at that level, it seems like, you know, it's like in Little League Baseball, you know, you got a scoreboard and a scorekeeper up top and you play, but we're not going to be as concerned about officiating it perfectly as you are in the World Series.
Right.
So, I don't know. We could probably talk about this all night, but
No doubt.
I was disappointed in the TNT / CBS coverage. First, I was disappointed in the TNT coverage because there's way too many commercials. Most of the other majors have limited commercials.
Right.
TNT was pumping these commercials at us all the time. The Omega Watch commercials just, I can't take it anymore. You know, we've heard it all last year or past 2 years with
Rory.
And now there's another version of it, and I guess they're sponsoring the Olympics too, so get used to that. But what I was really upset with TNT and CBS, I should say, is I still think there is a lack of innovation in the way we cover golf on TV as compared to the other sports. It used to be a big deal to just show the beauty of the course and everything, especially when HD TV first came about. But, you know, they need to step up their game a little bit. The Shot Tracker, Pro Tracer, that's all good stuff. But I'd like to see some more innovation. But I also just can't believe, and this was another thing that we were texting about during the final round, is like Robert Streb is 4 shots off the lead with like 9-10 holes to play. You don't see any shots at all. And he's on my fantasy team, and so I just want to see him because in my mind I'm thinking, come on, Streb, make a birdie and I don't know what's going on other than the holes keep going by and he keeps making pars, you know. So
yeah,
it's show more shots.
Yeah, I mean, because that was the dilemma too. You know, you got the two leaders are in two separate groups, and they basically were just showing those two the whole way through. And there's other guys coming up the leaderboard, you know, whether they really had a legitimate shot or not.
Right.
But they basically showed. They basically showed Walker, Day, and Stenson the whole final round.
The British Open's the only one that should have showed limited number of players.
Sure.
Because
yeah,
it was only two in contention. It was a duel.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
These other ones, there's I don't know, 6 or 8 people that should have got
there's
a good amount of coverage.
-9, -10.
Yeah. Rather than putting out an 18.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you see that with their last shot as they walk off to sign the card. But yeah, I agree. Imagine what, like, if from a producer's perspective, producing the golf course, you're taking a pretty big chance. If all of a sudden Jimmy Walker doubles back-to-back holes, it's a whole different tournament, and you got to reintroduce the public to everybody else who's involved.
Oh, by the way, Robert Streb is.
Oh, yeah, guess what? Jimmy Walker just doubled the last two holes. Now Robert Streb's one shot off of Jason Day, who's the leader.
Yeah.
And they're like, Robert, who?
Well, that happened at the Masters.
Yeah, you're right with Willett. All of a sudden, you know. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, they didn't even show any of his shots, really, did they?
It was all Jordan Spieth until.
Right.
Until the 12th
hole. Until the 12th hole.
Yep.
So, and really, I think it's a disservice to a guy like Robert Streb, who. Mm-hmm.
Quality player.
Yeah. And really, to a lot of other players who are playing in the final round of a major championship, they go home and they watch the taped footage and they're like, wait a second, Dad, I thought I was just out there, like, you know, 4 shots off the lead on the back nine. And
right.
You wouldn't even know it. So,
yeah, I mean, so to that point, too, with the big three, you know, big four, none of them win a major this year.
Yeah, which brings me to the next topic.
Yeah.
which is Jason Day. I mean, is he the clear number one? You think the number one player in the world would have won a major this year, right?
Yeah.
But I
how can you say he's the clear number one when DJ, who's he's number two, won two out of the last four tournaments?
Opened with a 77, though.
Yeah. Well, true.
I would lean towards DJ as right now being the number one player in the world, although he didn't show it this past week. Just looking at the body of work all season long.
I think those
but
two
it's
are.
Not, it's not clear cut.
No.
Well, the best argument I have in defense of Day, and you guys know I'm a big Jason Day fan, and I think he's the best player in the world, is that you take the cumulative score of all four majors, of all the guys that make the cut, and Jason Day wins that tournament. That how many holes would that be? That 16-round tournament, if you did the four majors, all the guys that make the cut, he wins it going away. Okay. It's not even close. He's 9 under par. Beaten Spieth by 12 shots thanks to finishes of Ty Day was 10th at the Masters, 8th at the Open, 22nd at the British Open, and then runner-up at the PGA. Day and Spieth were two of only 14 players to play the weekend at all four majors. They also finished 1 and 2 in this stat last year, with Spieth coming out ahead thanks to the 54 under total, which broke Tiger Woods' mark from 2000. So the rest of the list filled with names you might not expect. Checking in at third was Emiliano Grillo. He played the final 36 on Sunday with Jason Day at 10 over par. That's his major season total.
All four events.
Yeah. And then, he had a pretty sneaky good major season. Tied for 13th at the PGA, tied for 12th at the British, tied for 17th at the Masters, and tied for 54th at the U.S. Open. Kevin Na, fourth place on this list.
Wow.
At 13 over, followed by Lee Westwood at 14 over, that's kind of surprising too. Rafa Cabrera-Bello, the Spaniard, at 15 over, and then at 16 over, you got Martin Kaymer, Danny Willett, and Bill Haas, followed by Adam Scott, who's plus 17, and then Bubba Watson, plus 26, Justin Thomas, plus 27, and Kevin Kisner, plus 29. Those are the guys that made the cut in all four majors this year. And Jason Day, so you compare him to Kevin Kisner, plus 29, and Jason Day was 9 under par. So that's a big lead. It's a 38-stroke lead. Hopefully Day can, luckily held him off on the back nine. Day has four runner-up finishes in the majors in his career against only one victory. He's 28 years old, 9 years younger than Walker, who won it. Future still incredibly bright. He's a better putter and wedge player. Arguably, Johnson's improved his wedges, but he's a better putter and wedge player than Dustin Johnson or Rory, and he's more powerful than Jordan Spieth. I think he's my number one guy, and I think I think that if you're going to argue it's Rory, you're talking about 2 years ago, and if you're going to talk about Spieth, you're going to talk about last year, which. Still, that is recent history, but Spieth this year, pretty disappointing. DJ probably the only one who right now you could argue is better than Jason Day.
Yeah, and I think, I feel like it's not clear-cut, but it's probably Day than DJ. DJ was right there, obviously, at the U.S. Open last year, so his body of work for the last year has been pretty comparable to Day's. If you're talking about overall right now, recently, it's probably DJ, but in the majors, when it counts the most, Jason Day's been the guy. So you got to give him a little bit of the nod, I guess. Can't go wrong.
I can't argue either way.
Yeah.
It's 51-49, whichever one you want, I guess.
Yeah, both.
At this point, I guess the next month might make it more clear. May not.
Sure. Well, they're both great players. They're both fun to watch.
Yep.
It's not a bad thing to have both of those two be in the argument for who's number one in the world. And hopefully Jordan and Rory get it together going into the FedEx Cup playoffs and make for some good golf there.
So that brings us to our next question tonight. We had four first-time major winners this year, and we would have bet a lot of money heading into this year that either Day or Spieth or McIlroy, one of the big three, was going to win at least one major. Right. You know, is this trend going to continue? And if it does, who is the next first-time major winner? Because there's some good candidates out there. Of course, we always talk about Sergio.
Right.
But what about Brandon Grace? He has four top five finishes in his last seven majors. Figure his time's got to come soon. Brooks Koepka, who missed the British Open with an injury but was in contention, tied for fourth. And it's his fourth top 10 finish in his last 10 major starts. Seems well-suited for majors. And then Hideki Matsuyama, who, if they awarded the tournament this weekend to the best ball striker, he would have won by 20. He just couldn't make a putt.
Right.
So you figure if you're going to hit the ball that good, then you're going to also, you know, get hot with the putter one of these times and win. So
right.
Now, who do you guys think if – because there will be another first-time major winner probably next year. You know, who will it be?
I think Sergio, not that he's done as a golfer, obviously he's playing well, but I just don't think he's ever going to win a major.
Colin Montgomery.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the cards for him.
Right.
He is a lot like Phil was for all those years before Phil won, but Phil finally broke through, and then he won a few more after that, obviously, but I just think that Sergio's past that point now where Phil was, and he still right. hasn't gotten it done, and I just don't know if it'll ever happen there. So that doesn't answer your question,
yeah,
Jim.
I need a player name.
But
I'm going to say who wouldn't win.
Yeah, who wouldn't win Sergio?
I'd like to see Koepka be the next guy. I think he's on the cusp right now, and I think he could, if he keeps it together, I think he could be a major factor at the Masters next year and,
totally
and moving forward.
Who do you think, Brownie, Kevin Chappell?
Well, I like Kevin Chappell, you know that. I'd lead towards Hideki Matsuyama. I mean, his swing is so darn slow and all that. It's tough to watch him. His pace of play is pathetic. But if he doesn't get warned and get slow play penalties pretty quick. But anyways, he's a player. He's a machine. You're right. If he putts just reasonably, he's going to contend.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's one of those unflappable kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Probably can't speak English at all. Not that matters. I think he's got the game to win a major, and I think he could win any one of the four.
And like Henrik Stenson, he would become the first major champion from Japan for his country.
Yes.
Stenson, the first
right.
major champion from Sweden.
Yeah.
I'd agree with both those. I think Matsuyama's a future major champ. I think Brooks Koepka's a future major
right.
champ, you know, but mm-hmm. For me personally, I'm going with Brandon Grace. He would have been my choice heading into this year as mm-hmm. a first, well, along with Dustin Johnson, as maybe a first-time major champion winner. So I think Grace is the one that's poised not only to get that first major, but to then take it even a little further and yeah. become one of the top five players in the world.
I agree. He plays well in the tough events. It's a solid pick, no doubt.
All three were solid. I think we can't go wrong. I think we might get three major champions in the next.
We haven't done good in our picks of the week, so I don't know how we're.
We might have just jinxed all three of them.
Yeah.
So, hey, trivia time, fellas. We're going to the Travelers, back to a regular PGA Tour stop before then the John Deere that will run concurrently with the Olympics. But my question for you, and I'll give the answer at the end of the show, and you can tweet your answer to it at the Golf J, and the first one to do it will win a Golf J hat. What was the Travelers Championship's original name when it debuted at River Highlands, which was then called the TPC of Connecticut, in 1984? What was the original name of the Travelers Championship? And we'll give you the answer to that at the end of the show. So, golf tip time. And I got a tip for you guys for all our listeners today. That's so many golf tips are focused on the swing and this and that. This tip has nothing to do with your score, nothing to do with bettering your game. It has to do with bettering a few things to think about to better your enjoyment of the game, which should then translate into better golf in the long term. But it's the little things that I think. Playing with some newer golfers to the game that haven't played golf their whole life that I notice, and I might tell them. The first one example, and you guys might have some of your own, is don't put your – after you chip with your wedge and you got your wedge and your putter in your hand and the golf cart's off to the side, don't drop your wedge in the rough you can't see it there. You're going to forget about it, especially after you three putt and you're upset. Put the club on the pin. When somebody puts that pin, I like to drop my wedge on the pin every time because you know what? You will never, ever
somebody's gonna
forget it. If you can't quite do that just because of where the pin is and where people are putting, put it on the path you're going to walk back to the cart on the green, though.
Right, right.
Not in the rough.
That's what I tell Carter to do, you know, because he'll lose a club here and there. I say, put it on the path that we're walking towards either the next tee box or your cart so you don't forget it.
Yep.
Absolutely. I got a quick tip, though.
Yeah, is it related to this type of thing, this theme?
No.
Well, let me give you a couple more. another tip that I had, and now I think I might have lost my train of thought. What was my other quick tip? Well, give me your tip quick.
Don't triple bogey the first hole. It's not good for you.
That is a good tip.
So hit it six times, put it in your pocket?
Yeah.
Go back
to the tee and give yourself a mulligan?
No, try to hit a good drive and not get yourself in that much trouble to begin with. The triple bogey the first hole and get you all mad in a bad frame of mind. So you get out of your routine.
What did Nicholson do? Hit it across the road a couple times.
Unbelievable. He was my pick, too, this week. And he, as usual, as he's done for the last 30 years, whenever I pick him, he lets me down in a big way.
Yeah.
So if Phil would have heard this show last week, if he gave me a tip, he'd have been in contention.
Right. Good tip. Good tip.
You went strong with the two open guys in our little fantasy draft.
Yeah, Stenson worked out.
Yeah.
But Mickelson didn't. Second tip I have along the lines of the first tip is when anybody in your group hits the shot, but especially for yourself even, watch the ball until you can't see it anymore, until it stops rolling. So if somebody hits it and it's rolling towards the wood, watch it. Watch the tree that's near. And that way when you go to look at it, you're going to have a general idea of where it is. And so many times I play with guys who hit one awry, and I try to watch their balls too, and I'm pretty good at finding balls because I know when I'm looking for it, it's generally within like a 30-yard, at the most, circle. Mm-hmm. These guys are off by 50 yards sometimes looking for where their ball. So when your ball goes awry, watch it till it ends and pick a mark that you'll remember. Like, oh, that's that tree with the funny bark. Or I think I saw it bounce twice left and go past that trunk of that willow tree. Things like that.
Sounds like this might have happened yesterday morning in your group, maybe?
Well, it happens all the time.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. And to be honest with you, sometimes I don't, and I always kick myself because you really have no idea where it is unless you give yourself some point of reference before you drive up there and start looking for it.
Right. People get upset. Smack the club in the ground and not watch where the ball goes, and you don't find it.
And you get more upset when you can't find it, and you waste time finding it, and you know whether you have to go back to the tee or drop one. But you know,
but you mentioned you watch other people's shots. You really can't count on that, so you got to take care of yourself.
Right, right.
If it means you got to point to that tree that's kind of red, and you walk right towards that tree that's kind of red, you're going to find the ball.
And especially when, I try to really mark it down and. Mm-hmm. And I feel confident I'm going to find it before I even leave the tee because I know in the general vicinity of where it is. When I'm more apt to not find one might be when I don't hit too far offline into some rough or something, and I don't know the distance-wise, which another tip I have is, let's say that, Doug, you and I are playing and that generally you are hitting the ball 10 yards farther than I hit the ball, and you hit a great drive down the middle of the fairway, pretty standard, okay? And then I flay mine to the right, but I hit it pretty solid too, but it's just offline. I shouldn't be looking past your ball for my ball. I should be looking about 10 yards behind your ball my ball because it's a point of reference.
Right.
And I see a lot of guys do that too where they're looking way ahead, and I'm like, you didn't hit it as far as he hit it, so it's got to be back here. The further... And sometimes I'll say, it can't be any further than this because I haven't seen you hit a drive past Doug's ball all day, and it wasn't that one. Mm-hmm. So stop looking up there horizontal to Doug's ball and get back here 20 yards and start searching for your ball with me.
Right. No, that's a good point.
So I don't know, are there any little tidbits that you guys might have just little things that aren't related to the golf swing that might help your enjoyment, of the game out there? I mean, last week we talked about watching other people's putts. That's another good one, too, to help you read the green.
How about a pace of play tip?
Okay.
Most people ride in golf carts now.
Yep.
Right? You hit your shot. Take your club with you. Go sit down in a golf cart. Drive to the ball. Don't put the club away until you get to the ball, because you got to get out and get to your bag anyways.
Right.
That's true. You would cut down the access time to your golf bag in half. Over a round of four guys, it'll save 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. Now, it might not be driving to your ball, but drive to the next idle moment, which right. might be Rhett's ball.
Mm-hmm.
Get out, put your club away. You haven't slowed down play. Yeah. Don't do it at the tee box. Don't do it at the green. Do it somewhere else.
And potentially take out your club for the yes. next shot if you know what it's going to be. If you're on the green, yeah.
Right.
Right.
And furthermore with that, too, I play with a lot of guys. I like to drive the cart because of sometimes when other people drive the cart, it drives me crazy. Not guys that play a lot of golf, but someone that doesn't play quite as much golf, it drives me, makes me a little crazy sometimes, because a lot of times what they'll do is they'll drive up to my shot and their ball will be 30 yards over to the right and I'm up first. So I'll pull my club and I'm like, get out of here. Go to your ball. Start right. thinking about your shot. Don't wait for me to hit. Get back in the cart. Drive right. all the way to your ball before you start.
Right.
So that speeds up play right. and the enjoyment for everybody too. If you don't have to go shot by shot by shot, you know. And a lot of times too, I see this too. I'll pull up to a guy who's say he's 40 yards, 50 yards out from the green. He's got a wedge and my ball's on the back of the green, and I'll pull up and he'll just take out his wedge and grab your putter, and after you hit the shot, walk.
Yes,
and, yeah. and by the time you get to the green, I'll already be over my ball.
Right.
You know, so things like that. And one final cart tip, since you brought up the carts. It really does save time to take the extra effort to bring the golf cart around to the side of the green that you're going to be exiting towards the yeah. next tee.
Right.
You don't want to backtrack 20 yards to get your cart and then drive around. Generally, when you're driving up to the green, you have a little more time at that point to pull it around, yeah. and so you're closer to the next tee.
Usually, right. you're dropping your cart partner off there because they've got a approach shot or something. If that works that way, because even if you're not the driver of the cart, you can still take the cart.
Yes,
and, that's right.
And move it up to where you're going to be exiting the green when everybody's done.
Right, you're not Miss Daisy.
No, just you know, hey, you've got a chip and you've got your putter. I'm going to bring it around. And even if you've got to go back because your ball is on the back part of the green, you've got to walk back through, you're still saving time because he's going to hit, you're going to park and get there before, and you got two other guys that have got to play. So that's another part of it. You know, don't be shy to take the cart and move it, even if right. you're not the driver.
That's right. So, hey, we are running a little short on time, so we better move ahead real quickly. I just want to remind everybody what's ahead here in the world of competitive golf here. We got the Travelers Championship this week. And then next week, it would be the Olympics in Rio and the John Deere Classic running concurrently. And the Olympic golf is running Thursday through Sunday, just like a regular event. So that should feel very accustomed to watching for viewing. Then you got the Wyndham Championship, which is the last regular season tour event, followed by the PGA Tour playoffs, starting with the Barclays on August 25th. The Deutsche Bank, the BMW Championship, the Tour Championship, September 22nd, so we're about a month and a half away from the Tour Championship, followed by the Ryder Cup on September 30th, followed by, on October 13th, 2 weeks later, less than 2 weeks later, the Safeway Open, which is the first event of the next season. So there's your upcoming slate. But for now, let's talk about this week's event, the Travelers Championship at TPC River Highlands. 6,800-yard course, par 70, on the banks of the Connecticut River in Cromwell, Connecticut. You can watch it on TV Thursday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. on the Golf Channel, Saturday and Sunday, 1 to 2:30 on the Golf Channel, 3 to 6, or whenever it ends, on CBS. And so you got world number 6, Bubba Watson and Paul Casey, last year's playoff combatants, heading up the roster that features 12 of the top 30 in the official world golf rankings. Number 12, Brandon Grace. Number 14, Patrick Reed. And number 15, Louis Oosthuizen are creating a pretty strong lineup for the Travelers. John Rahm, who's the former amateur from Spain who's been playing great, will be there as well on a special sponsor's exemption, as will Bryson DeChambeau, among a host of others. So just four New Englanders have ever won in this event, and two came back-to-back in 2005. It was Brad Faxon in 2005 and J.J. Henry in 2006. The others were Azinger in 87 and 89 and Bob Toski in 1953. And in the tournament's 63-year history, only Phil Mickelson's 2001-2002 performances have won it back-to-back. So only Phil's won it back-to-back. So does that mean Bubba's a bad pick this week? I don't know. Give me your picks, fellas.
Go ahead, Doug.
John Rahm.
Darn it.
You like Rahm? I like that pick. I considered it. I didn't go with it, but I did consider John Rahm.
I didn't know if Kevin Chappell was playing, so I'll go with John Rahm.
Who do you got, Rod?
I'm going to say the same thing. I think
you can pick the same guy.
Yeah, I'm going John Rahm. I think he's going to get his tour card with a win this week and solidify his status as the true best new player on the tour.
Spaniard.
Overtaking Bryson DeChambeau and all the hype that went around him around the Masters. So, I'm going John Rahm as well.
And I'm going with Bubba Watson.
All right.
And you'll hardly ever hear me pick Bubba, but you know, the thing about Bubba is he finds a course he likes. He generally plays well. Yeah. And he's won back-to-back, or he's won at the same event multiple times, more than once.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to take it home this week, although a part of me wants to pick Brandon Grace. The reason I put Bubba instead of Grace is that Grace was just in the heat of a major championship, and I just always feel there's a little bit of a letdown when you go back to the regular tour after being right in the heat, where Bubba seems to, thrive when he's in a comfortable environment. Yeah. And so I got Bubba.
We picked Dustin Johnson 2 weeks ago. And
did okay.
We did all right. So, yeah, we'll take this.
We'll go with that.
We'll go the same again.
Yeah.
So, speaking of picks, Jimmy Walker and Brooks Koepka sewed up the last two Ryder Cup point spots with their performance this week at the PGA. And I think that rounds up a pretty strong American squad.
Oh, yeah. When you compare it to the European squad, it's certainly strong.
But who do you pick for the captain's choices?
Well, the bubble guys are Bubba at 9, Patrick Reed at 10, Kuchar 11, Fowler's 12th. Then you got Piercy, Haas, and McGirt rounding out the top 15. So do you just go chalk with the top 12, or do you actually pick somebody else?
I, from the top of my head, just hearing those names, I pull Kuchar and I pull Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Fowler hasn't been playing that great this year, he's got the experience in the Ryder Cup, and Kuchar is one of the more steady players in all golf. So I just give him the quick eye test. Give me Fowler, give me Kuchar, let's go play.
Yeah.
How about you, Brownie?
Well, I think you got to take Patrick Reed. He drove the Europeans nuts the last time with his up to his ear and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's true, too.
And he played with Jordan Spieth, and he played well. I don't think he's in great form necessarily, but because he's fallen down the list. But just because he tormented him so much. But they get four picks, right? Or we get four picks.
Four, yeah.
Four.
Oh, that's true, yeah. I guess that came up short.
Yeah, you came up short by two. I like Bill Haas. He did well the last time and got the winning point.
President's Cup.
Last year. So I like Bill Haas. I think he's solid. And my third pick, I would actually go down and get Jim Furyk.
Yeah, I heard him mentioned, and
he's in good form. He's only off the list overall because of his injury, but he's been playing well. He brings a lot of experience. Although our team is pretty experienced compared to the Europeans, it's just that I don't know if it's time to bring in some young gun that, I can't think of anybody right now off the top of my head. Like Robert Streb, for example. I think it's a bad. We need to win this Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Like Berger and a couple of those guys.
And I guess I'd probably take
farther down
Bubba next. That'd be my four guys. I'd go with Bubba, Haas, Furyk, and Reed.
I got a little different than that, but.
Well, I think if you take Furyk, it's nice because when you take him, you can say, look, you're not going to be playing all the rounds.
That's right.
Some people have to sit, so we're not going to make you play 36
play
in a day, but I want you to be there with the team and be a leader.
Yeah.
And, Furyk has every bit of right to be a captain as Davis Love does. You know,
sure,
they're both from the same era. So
well,
who would you round it out with, Brent?
I would go, Bubba at 9. That's at 9. I'd keep him there. I'd pull out Patrick Reed, and I'd put in Bill Haas, and then I'd go with Kuchar and Fowler to make the 12. I like, Fowler, two Ryder Cups ago, played great, and did well for us. I like where he's at. He came around this week and played much better. And Kuchar just is so solid. He's so consistent. I like where he's at. And Bill Haas, he grinds it. He did what he did to win the FedEx Cup a few years back, and you know his mental, him, his mental toughness. I like where he's at in this type of format, and obviously, I think he can do that. And then you know Bubba's a big hitter, and he's got some experience with it. So
who's 7 and 8 right now?
JB's 7 and Snedeker's 8.
And so Holmes is a bomber, and yeah. You know he's the type of guy that's right. Good for the course.
But yeah. They're still vulnerable, right? They could get overtaken.
Yeah,
there's automatic picks.
Because it isn't closed out yet like it normally is, because the PGA is usually another 3 weeks away. Okay. So usually they end it with that. So I think it's got to be what's after the I think it's after the Wyndham.
The Travelers, the John Deere's, and the Wyndham.
Yeah, I think once the Wyndham's over, I think that's it, because I don't think they don't use the.
But the FedEx point stuff. For the PGA is so weighted that Koepka and Walker pretty much have sewn up their spots.
Yeah, right. I think even Zach Johnson is locked in.
I just wonder if a guy like. Fowler at 12 could jump up into the top 8 with a good showing the next month.
Absolutely.
Must be able to shuffle the deck. So, this discussion could change as the weeks go on.
Sure. So. It definitely could, especially if, because, a few of these guys are, going to the Olympics. So, with Bubba and Ricky and Kuchar going to the Olympics, some of these guys could get points playing in the John Deere and, the Wyndham that they may not necessarily play in.
Right.
So, it'll be interesting. It'll be a couple more weeks to see where it's at, but. The way it stacks up against this other team is if we don't win it this year at home with this team against what Europeans are throwing out there and the way that some of the best players are playing, it'd be very, very disappointing.
Well, if we get this year, I think we got to lobby for Jim Sinicropi to be the captain in 2 years.
I like he's got a good ping pong game, I heard. So.
Well, quickly, we're running out of time here. The odds for the 2017 Masters are out, and Tiger Woods is 66-1. How can that be? How can that be? Doug, I'll let you.
Well, it's Tiger Woods for one, and it's Augusta National for two.
Yeah.
Okay, if he comes out and plays a few tournaments, he knows that golf course like the back of his hand. Okay, that's why. Because you think it should be higher, because he hasn't played in
over a year,
12 months, 14 months now. Well, but I think those odds might increase as he doesn't play. If he doesn't play in January, February, that's got to go up.
You
right?
think.
How do you even put him on the list when he hasn't played in a year?
But he knows the golf course. He could go there on Monday and play the golf course.
Right. Sure. May I agree with that? So. But, just to say real quick, with the favorites being Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth right now, you could place an 8-1 bet on any of those guys. And, honestly, I think that Jordan Spieth's a pretty good bet at 8-1 at Augusta, given, how dominant he's been the last two times he played there. Just one hole really derailed him from winning back-to-back green jackets. So, but who knows how they'll be playing a year from now. Actually, 8 months is all till the major season starts up again. And I got to give you our trivia question real quick before we get out of here. Our trivia answer. The TPC at River Highlands was originally called, anybody know?
GHO.
It's on the script, but the Greater Hartford Open. So I kind of liked it better when it was called the Greater Hartford Open.
Sammy
when
Davis
tournaments
was involved
were like
in that,
that
name. Remember Sammy Davis Jr. at Greater Hartford Open?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
I'm not sure if it was 84, but back in the day, all those entertainers had a piece of those tournaments.
Tweet us to get your hat.
So, thanks for spending some time with us again on the GolfJ.com podcast. We got a lot to talk about heading forward. Next week, we're going to come back and recap the Travelers and preview the Olympics. So, that'll be a good show. Yep. We'll also talk about the John Deere a little bit, I'm sure. And then the PGA Tour season winds down with the Wyndham, and we're into the playoffs, and that'll be a good series of episodes leading up to the Ryder Cup, which really the Ryder Cup podcast might be the most fun we have all year. So, the major championship season is over, but there's still plenty of golf to watch.
Golf
and really,
a lot of big golf.
A lot of big-time golf. Yeah. And that PGA the PGA Tour playoffs is something that's really grown on me over the past few years. So we will be back. Until then, connect with us online at Twitter. At the Golf J on Instagram at the_GolfJ. Search for Golf J on Facebook. We got to do something on Snapchat, I think, Rhett.
Okay.
So we'll get on that. All of our episodes and the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at golfj.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 p.m. to talk about the Olympics in Rio, recap the Travelers. Until then, guys, hit them long, not often. GolfJ.com.